All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, September 30th. I am Doug Norrie. That is...
James Davis.
Oh, I thought you were going to adopt your radio personality voice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's James Davis here, and I am on the podcast with you and looking forward to talking football today, Doug.
Interesting. That's a little more like an Ira Glass NPR thing. So I thought you were going to go, like, radio shock.
Yeah, James Davis coming at you.
There it is.
We're from Daily. 03820. That's Dover, New Hampshire, folks. We're talking NFL football coming into this weekend, DFS style. Let's do this thing.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started or continue winning on for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. Head over to the site and you can get access to our player projections, optimal lineups, player lab, all for $29.95 a month. And that includes NFL, MLB, NBA, and NHL, all under one subscription blanket. Go over there, grab that. You're all good to go. That will cover you for every sport. Like I said, optimal lineups powered by our good, good friends over at Lineup Lab. Today, we are going to go down game by game and break down the DFS implications from the entire slate of Sunday. We're going to do a one-second rewind here from the game last night where our optimal lineups for the Thursday game only had two players. I'm saying players because there were two slots, and that was AJ Green and the Bengals from last night.
The Nuts.
Could we have started off Thursday any better?
No, I'm feeling great, man. Even though I fell asleep with my sick kid at 9 o'clock, hearing that news from you this morning felt pretty good.
Yeah, no, it was great. And the Bengals missed a pick six by about an inch and a half, I would say, when the ball ball for an interception. Overall, though, AJ Green really didn't do anything in the second half, but his first half was really good enough to pay value. He had like 8 catches for $120 or something like that and a touchdown by the end of the first half. So he was already, it was all kind of gravy after that. I was actually surprised. Typically considering Thursday players tend to go over-owned, and maybe this is a remnant of the past. I'm not totally sure. The idea for a long time was Thursday players go over-owned simply because they're Thursday. People want the sweat. They want the guys, whatever. AJ Green for cash games was only 50% start. I know that's a high number, but for
that's a huge number.
No, it
only?
Is. Yeah, I don't know. I just think, maybe I'm overstating it. He was just in such just the perfect spot for a guy who's been great this season against a team that is terrible against the pass. Maybe I'm overstating how much I think 50% is, but
50% is enormous. I mean, there won't be another player 50% owned this weekend. Will there be? Do you think? I can't think of anyone. I mean, we had Julio Jones, a wide receiver for...
Maybe on DraftKings, maybe not as much on FanDuel. Yeah, I don't think FanDuel will have that.
The spreads are somewhat different on DraftKings, right? Because you can get absurd guys like Colby Fleener might top that number on the main slate, right?
Prior Beasley, guys Howard.
Say it again?
Prior Beasley, Howard. Those guys are all coming
really
cheap. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, those guys, that's a good point. But you won't see another guy in Green's price range come anywhere close to that.
Right? Yeah. Maybe I just expected it to be higher because I was so high on him. Anyway, so the game Thursday starts off really, really well. Let's get into the Sunday games. The first game is the annoyingly timed 9:30 Eastern start, Indianapolis and Jacksonville playing in London. They take what could have been, a decent implication fantasy game and kind of stick it in the netherworld of scheduling, but we can talk about it anyway because I believe there is a slate. Yeah, it's the Sunday to Monday slate on FanDuel and DraftKings. Where are we looking in this game? Indiana slightly favored, although they have to take a long trip across the pond to play this game.
Yeah, sure. So we talked about T.Y. Hilton a little bit. I think he's definitely going to be a very attractive big tournament play in particular, a guy who will see a ton of targets in this game, but is kind of notorious for not turning a lot of targets into receptions. I don't really think there's anyone else on the Colts side of the ball. I mean, Luck, I think, is a reasonable big tournament option. Has probably been too erratic to consider for cash games. And then the Jags. I mean, the Jags are kind of all over the place. I have some thoughts there, but I'm curious what you think.
I mean, it's hard to... you can't trust anyone in the running game to start. So that is just...
Ivory may play, may not play. Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, if Ivory were not to play, I guess we can maybe consider the T.J. Yeldon thing again for a tournament, but he's just done absolutely nothing even when he had the opportunities. Indiana's a pretty bad defense, so I'm not so worried about it. But, I mean, Allen Robinson's a big play threat. Bortles has some upside, I guess, just because Indiana's not great on defense. The whole game just doesn't really... Honestly, I could consider some guys on the Indiana side, Indianapolis side, like you said, but I don't know. Overall, the game doesn't really excite me.
Yeah, I think Allen Robinson will be a higher owned guy. I mean, he was a big cash game play last week. I'm not sure if you noticed that, but he was like around 20% in cash games because he was down under 8,000 on FanDuel. And, you know, he was great. He wound up getting the two touchdowns. He's clearly, you know, Jacksonville's first and second look right now. He's still one of the target leaders in the whole NFL. So you might look at the $8,300 price and say you're getting him at a discount. You probably are. But he suffers from a lot of the same stuff T.Y. Hilton suffers from, which is, you know, just 16 receptions on 31 targets this season. He does have the two touchdowns, but if he doesn't have those two touchdowns or has one touchdown or whatever, he's all of a sudden looking pretty bad. And averaging just 60 yards a game receiving this season is not getting it done compared to some of the other higher volume, just in terms of total receptions and just better yards per catch guys. So I'm not really, really interested in him other than any, you know, outside of any sort of Bortles and Robinson stack, but you're not tricking anyone with that because if you play that slate, you're specifically looking at that game. So I'm just not interested probably.
You know,
I think this is a great game actually just to fade that whole game, play mm-hmm. the Sunday to Monday slate. Don't take any players from this game and go in a different direction.
And I know there's been research done about what happens to teams when they have to fly across the country into different time zones, like West Coast, East Coast, or vice versa.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like it's good for that team. This has to follow along those same lines. It's a huge time zone shift. The game's just at a totally different time. You have flight stuff. I'm happy to just stay away from it totally. I just don't see the total upside in it, really, just considering all the contextual things going on. Let's go on to Sunday. First game we have on the list here is the Browns heading to Washington. Washington coming off a decent win against the Giants where they kind of put things back together. Cousins really doesn't do anything differently than he had been doing in the first couple games, except maybe getting a little luckier, and all of a sudden Washington fans like him again, which is just funny how things work like that. But
yeah, precisely what we called in the podcast last week, right? I mean, to your point, completion percentage, 60% from 61% the previous week, threw for just under 300 yards. He had been over 300 yards the previous 2 weeks. He just punches a few in the end zone and doesn't throw any picks. And yeah, I mean, the same exact fantasy total, by the way, from the previous week as well. So
yeah, it's a ridiculous narrative. The line did start open at minus 10 for the Redskins, has dropped to actually minus 7.5. That's a pretty decent shift in terms of just overall expected just totals from both teams, mostly coming up on the Brown side of things. Who do you like in this game? I mentioned prior to start, and I know we talked about him in our last podcast with the picks. Anyone else to consider, or if you want to touch on prior again, go ahead.
Well, I think it's just important to reemphasize, if you didn't catch yesterday's podcast, that Pryor will be a unanimous guy on DraftKings and probably a very high ownership guy on FanDuel as well. So the decision to Pryor or not to Pryor, I think, is going to be a big one. I would say, like on DraftKings, I think you just pretty much have to play him independent of format because the price is just too cheap that, you know, even if he's like something less than great in a big tournament, it's not going to kill you, but there's a great chance he just has 10 receptions or something, in which case you'll just be already dead in a big tournament if you don't play him. But on FanDuel, I think you have a more interesting choice. And I think he's a pretty interesting fade target for big tournaments just because, again, people view him as this huge upside guy, rightfully, and view him as a high floor guy, pretty rightfully as well. But the Browns are just such a mess that he just could be bad, right? I mean, like, there's no guarantees that he's going to be great. So I think you'll get a lot of separation from the field by not playing him on tournaments on FanDuel. And that's probably the direction I'll lean in, at least for some portion of my buy-in. But for cash games, he's just probably a must-play. And it's worth just pointing that out so people don't miss out on it.
I think people get scared off by the 7,000 price on FanDuel, frankly. And
you think so? 7,000 is not much.
Yeah, I think it falls into that middle ground where people sometimes don't really know where to go. And that's the only reason I don't think his ownership levels will be that high. But
let me throw out a few guys like that are in that same category. So Travis Benjamin, a little cheaper. Do you think he's higher on than Pryor?
Yes.
No way. Let's bet.
Okay.
Do you want to bet 10 whole dollars?
Yeah, I mean, we could do that.
We're going to take that.
I just think Benjamin just has more of the narrative. I could be wrong here. I just think that the price, people worry about the price on Pryor. One good news is that Josh Norman is not going to follow him around the field. They're going to line him up in the slot, so he's not going to get that blanket treatment from Norman, though that hasn't really panned out the way the Redskins want to.
Well, Pryor's also half a foot taller than Norman, too, so
right.
It's not the ideal matchup. Like, Norman is much more suited to tracking those downfield guys that are not absolute giants like Terrell Pryor is. So I don't know if that's good or bad for Pryor, frankly.
Anyone on the Washington side of the ball? The Redskins are big favorites. Can you get behind Matt Jones? Maybe if they were able to get up and get the run game going, or in the receiving game, is anyone even interesting here?
Now, Matt Jones, I mean, it was a welcome sign to see him get 19 touches last week, but he just really hasn't done anything with the touches he has had. His snaps have been kind of all over the place also, so I just don't know what the point is. Like, it'd be one thing if he was 5,400, but given that you can get guys like for instance, I think Jordan Howard's opportunity is arguably as good or better, and you can pay $1,000 less for him. Like, I don't really understand why you'd go in that direction. DeSean Jackson's another guy, you know, is a week in, week out big game threat. But, you know, with him being limited in practice this week with the ankle injury, I think you can probably do better there as well. I mean, again, he's 6,900. So compare that to Pryor at 7,000. It's obviously not a cash game play. Jordan Reed's another guy who, you know, you and I have disagreed about quite a bit this season. I don't see as much potential in Reed as you do on the $7,500 price tag on FanDuel. He really just hasn't done anything yet. You know, the targets have kind of been there, but down to 11% target share last week, even though he played every offensive snap. I am not a Jordan Reed believer. I think that he's just that price is based on last year's production. And if you play him, I think it's akin to just giving money away.
Yeah, no, I think I've shifted my thoughts on there. I needed probably one more week to see it, and I am fully in the camp of they just have too many guys are throwing
too many bodies. Yeah, yep. That's it. And they're all pretty decent. You know, Crowder, Garcon, Jackson, Reed. Like, it's clear that they don't value any of those guys above the other necessarily. So I just don't. I'm not going to play any Washington guys in cash games for sure.
I think you can also consider the Redskins defense just because the Browns are still the Browns. I mean, I know they were able to do a couple things against Miami last week. They still have one of the lowest implied totals on the week. I think Redskins, there's an easy scenario that you can see the Browns just doing nothing, right? I think you can play the Redskins defense. Let's go on to the next game. Titans head to Houston. J.J. Watt is probably lost for the season. That definitely knocks the Houston, just the overall expectation, especially on defense. The line did drop off of that news. I believe it was off that news. It could have been off something else, but the line opened at -7 for Houston, down to -4.5, with actually their implied total going down 2. It's a little hard to equate that totally with someone happening on defense, but it could be the reason. The Titans are coming off a week where they really struggled against a bad Oakland team. Where do you see this game going in terms of fantasy?
Well, I think I've talked about Lamar Miller in the past as a guy who is continually underrated based on his opportunity. And, you know, it's interesting to compare him to a guy like Jordan Reed, because the criticism on Reed, of course, that I just made is that the production hasn't been there on the price. And you could certainly argue the same thing about Miller. I mean, 14, 11, and 13 fantasy points is not what you want on an $8,200 salary. The difference with Miller, though, is that his opportunity is still just downright elite. You know, 32 touches, 27, and then 25. So yeah, the Texans have had difficulty running the ball this season, and they haven't given Miller the opportunity to punch one in. But I would have to think that he's going to be their goal line back as well. You know, I don't see anyone challenging him for that role there. So I think that he's still a great big tournament play. I think you can do better in a similar price range and cheaper on basically all sites for cash games, but he's not going to be on a lot of radars. And, you know, whenever you're getting opportunity like that in a given game, you were just in that short list of guys who has the opportunity to have the biggest game of the week. And, you know, the combination of that huge upside plus low ownership, from my mind, means he's a great big tournament play.
Of those high volume guys that we're discussing, the running backs, this is like Blunt, Miller, Elliott, Forte, D'Angelo, Gurley, Hyde, and then some other ones.
Yeah, and D'Angelo's gone now, but you'd right. think so maybe Bell will inherit
no
that.
No other player from that top 10 to 15 list has less than 2 touchdowns this year. And those are all, you know, these are the every down guys that also get goal line carries, and Miller has 0. So, you know, you could equate some of that to bad luck. I would equate a decent amount of it too, because they're just going to get near the end zone at some point, and he's going to be the guy that they give the ball down to there. You're still getting him at a price. Like, so if he had punched in even one of those, you'd see his price, I think, in that like 8,000 range or higher on FanDuel, and you just don't see it that way right now. And I just think you're still getting.
He's 8,200 on FanDuel right now.
Oh, maybe I was wrong about the price. Maybe he'd be more like in the David Johnson territory. He'd just be if he was running a little better on touchdowns, you would see him there. I love him for cash game. He's a good example for me about why it's great to play multiple slates. So there's a few running backs like
That's
this.
A good point. And I don't mind him on those alternative slates. I really don't think you should play him in your cash games on the main slate though.
Interesting. Cause right now when you run an optimal lineup for FanDuel for us, I'm pretty sure he's in the second overall lineup, but like it's Melvin Gordon's the first one. And then they swap him in to Lamar Miller. So we can discuss that if we think that's correct. Let's go on the receiving side of things. Are we firmly out of the DeAndre Hopkins as a WR1 elite target guy at this point because of Fuller, or can we still kind of look at them as either one of those guys as any kind of safe in the passing game.
Yeah, Hopkins is interesting. I mean, at this point now, he's got one performance out of three games that you're really happy with out of your, you know, so-called WR1 slot. I think he's still got the transcendent upside. There's no question about that. But again, I don't know what are you hoping to accomplish by playing him in that in that price range on either side. I just don't get it. I don't know why you wouldn't just, like, we often talk about the difference between what you can get. So say you go from Antonio Brown to DeAndre Hopkins. Okay, you've got an $800 savings, but, you know, is that really worth it? Like, where are you going to spend up $800 elsewhere to achieve more safety than upgrading from Hopkins to Brown? So, and you're not going to be playing multiple guys in that high price range given the overall lack of punts. So I just don't see any way you can fit Hopkins into any lineup that would value safety this week. I just don't.
Yeah, no, I think I'm with you. I always get worried when teams start spreading the ball around like this. It's kind of the same thing with the Redskins, not to the same degree.
Yeah, the Falcons, it's the same story there. Like,
but even Lamar Miller has cut in. Even Lamar Miller's cut into his targets, right? So, like, there's guys cutting into the targets all over the place. The price hasn't come down to reflect it. He's still a great receiver, but you could just be great and have other good players in your team, and all of a sudden your value is significantly downgraded. I think that's the case.
It's not clear to me that he's a great receiver, by the way. I mean, I think he's clearly a good receiver, but, you know, again, last season, 192 targets is elite, but that's something your team can just choose to keep throwing you the ball. And you wonder how many guys could have replicated his performance, you know, the 111 catches and a ton of yards, but who could have caught 111 of those balls that were thrown in his direction last season. And I suspect the number is higher than a lot of people think, and that when we look back on Hopkins' career after the fact, it's less of a guy in Antonio Brown's discussion and more like a guy in that next tier below Allen Robinson, like the guys who were pretty good on a bad team. So.
Yeah, so I don't even want to, for myself, don't want to wade down the territory because I'm not a talent evaluator like that. So
I can tell. Ask me the questions. Well,
I plan on asking those. Texans defenses, I think, is another one you can consider here, even with the line shift. Titans don't have much on the way of offense. I mean, we were high on Mariota last week. That did not work out. They really just don't have a lot of weapons. They're not really expected to put up a ton of points. Texans will be incentivized to just control the game, especially on the ground. So I think the Texans defense is a team that you can really consider here as well.
Sure, and I think one more guy on the Titans who we've mentioned in the past, who hasn't shown up really from a fantasy perspective, but who could be, is Tajae Sharpe. Last week he comes out, still gets 14% of his team's targets. Now, he didn't turn it into anything, and this has become a recurring theme for Sharp. So it's definitely, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire situation. I'm concerned that that's going to kind of be how he and Mariota are hooking up right now, which is to say not very efficiently. That being said, if he's still going to go out there and get 14% or more of his team's targets, like he had 17% in week one and was reasonably efficient during that performance, he could be a guy that could blow up and very, very affordable on both sites because he hasn't really turned those targets into much so far. So if you just want a guy who's going to – he's definitely slipping off radars now. He was a very popular buzz guy last week. No one's talking about him going into this week. Great big tournament play and a guy there's no reason to play in cash games. So.
No, I'm with you. The next game on the list is the Raiders and the Ravens. The Raiders have continued to struggle against the pass in the aggregate this week. You know, their success against Tennessee last week aside. What do you see coming out of the Baltimore side of things, or is there anyone you can also play in the Raiders?
Well, on the Baltimore side of things, I'm really not seeing anybody. Is there anything you like about Baltimore?
Yeah, I like Steve Smith, actually. Steve Smith, the targets have been there not in the elite level of guys, but he saw, I think, something like 10 targets last week. He had 8 receptions. If he's 8 for 87 last week, saw 28% of the targets. And for $4,500 on DraftKings, I actually think he's a pretty strong cash game play. So he doesn't – I mean, if it was between him and, let's say, Pryor, because they're around the same price, I'd probably go Pryor just because he just has a few more ways that he can touch the ball. But I don't even mind playing both. And if you think that Smith trends back into close to a double-digit target guy against the defense that has struggled against the pass, then I can definitely talk myself into his price on DraftKings.
Yeah, I think that's actually quite a good call. And FanDuel as well, frankly, $6,100. If you want to compare him to a guy like Tajae Sharpe, for instance, he's got all the things that Sharpe has going for him as well, except for he's got both a track record and a recent track record of being able to convert that into a little bit more performance. So, yeah, I think that's probably a good one. One thing I don't love about Smith that kind of limits his upside is that he's not a super great red zone target just because he's kind of tiny. But, yeah, in terms of downfield, big play upside, I think you could do a lot worse, especially considering how bad Oakland's been against wide receiver ones.
So, it's hard for me to get excited too much on the Raiders side of things. They just, I mean, Cooper's a guy that you could see maybe crop up into some lineups. Not so much on our side of things. He falls into this weird 7,600 range on DraftKings, which is probably too expensive. And
yeah, it's a very competitive price slot on DraftKings for sure. And frankly, on FanDuel too. He's basically the same price on FanDuel. And, you know, in that same price range, you can pay up a little bit more and get a true elite guy. You can get one of those running backs we've talked about that's like, you can get LeGarrette Blount at 7,500. And while I think a lot of people think, I think actually a miscalculation a lot of people make in DFS is comparing guys at the same position. And while that's true, there's scarcity around which how many guys from each position you can play. There's also scarcity at price points. And that $7,500 price point in that range is very, very competitive. And in many cases, especially for cash game purposes, you just need to be elite. You need to have great opportunity and a great track record with it. And Cooper doesn't have that so far.
Yeah, Cooper's just under 10 targets per game this year. I mean, if you round up, he's at 10, so it's like 9.
And that's still great, right? I mean, getting 10 targets a game. This is why we saw, like, we were in the big Fantasy Pros competition. What's it called? The DFAC?
Yep.
And we saw him be a relatively big cash game start among other experts last week, and I think they were looking at that as a great matchup. And Cooper being a guy very similar into the vein of, like, Tajay Sharpe, who was getting big targets and not converting them into a ton of production so far, and maybe like as a sleeping dragon ready to rise up and breathe fire on everyone. That was a great analogy.
Wow, dude. That was so good.
And he lived up to their expectations. I mean, he wound up getting 17% of his team targets last week. It's just that wound up being a slow-paced game that didn't favor big play receivers. So I could see him bouncing back. I mean, he's a terrific big tournament play, especially because people are going to have some fatigue there. And he's obviously garnering a big, big chunk of their target share. But yeah, for cash game play, it's just not in the combo.
Next game up is the Seahawks and the Jets. The couple of interesting injury news pieces here. It looks like Eric Decker's not going to play. He hasn't been officially ruled out, but I don't know, just some of the buzz around that does
well,
not...
He just keeps missing practice. They haven't sent him for an MRI, but he's like not even stretching and stuff. Yeah, it doesn't look good.
Seattle has to travel across the country to New York. They're coming off of maybe what you consider to be a bounce-back game last week where Michael's able to put some stuff together. Wilson is able to hook up with Baldwin. The spread on this has to be, I would say, a home field thing plus a traveling across the country. Seattle's -2.5 right now with Jets only with less than 19 implied points. Do you like anyone? I mean, can you count on Michael getting enough carries to carry you in cash games here? And what does the Decker news do for you on the Jets side of the ball?
Well, we'll start with the Decker piece. So I think Decker being out, it's a very interesting wrinkle for this week because by and large, you don't want to play your receivers against Seattle. So on that tip, you know, it's not like the exact spot where you're pumped to just jam in, you know, all the other guys when a big target guy gets out of the picture. That being said, there are some interesting options this week. The first one I think is Quincy Enunwa. The man got 11 targets last week anyway. They've obviously been liking him quite a bit just based on the fact that he's out of nowhere and there's two high-profile guys and the fact that he could lead his team in targets in a week where Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall are on the team, I think was a pretty welcome sign. The problem, of course, is that he didn't really do much with them. He only caught three of them, and the other eight fell onto the ground, causing an incompletion. So I think that's not really not too welcome a sign. It makes him mostly a big tournament guy for me. And then there's Brandon Marshall. I mean, Brandon Marshall, this is one of those things I think we've talked about in the podcast, but definitely off air, where whenever we see a coach come out and like claim that they're going to definitely get the guy the ball. So if you missed this, the Jets coach came out and said, they're going to make sure Brandon Marshall gets the ball. What that means to me is like that they're kind of trying a little bit too hard, right? Like they don't really like the guy that much, or else they would kind of naturally be getting him the ball. And the fact that Quincy Enunwa could out-target him in a game was something like I would have taken the under on one time that happening all season long. So I don't know what to make of the situation here. It kind of just feels like a stay away overall, but I'm willing to be persuaded otherwise if you've got a good case for it.
No, it's a stay away. I think mostly because Seattle, right? Like, so if they were playing a crap team, then I would say then we could probably take some upside on the targets for getting these guys. The problem is Seattle is just so great against every wide receiver position. Like they rank, I mean, they're only 10th in the league in DVOA right now, but just in terms of against wide receiver ones, but they allow, I'm pretty sure, the fewest pass attempts per game. So they could just be running bad on what's happening when they're going Sherman's way. And then when you look at wide receiver two, I mean, no one's getting the ball there. They're averaging three. The wide receiver two against Seattle is averaging 3.2 looks per game, and that's zero. So if it was any other team almost but Seattle, I would say we have a nice chance and some opportunity coming out of the Jets side. The problem here is they could just run into another terrible game, and Fitzpatrick's he's coming off like a 5 interception game last week, and it's just not going to get a lot easier here. It's just a stay away for me, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, as I'm thinking about it more too, and just kind of not listening to and looking at some more stats.
Cool.
I think that, well, Decker actually is the third most targeted receiver on the Jets. Like, that's just nothing, right? I mean, like, Anunua actually leads the team in target share with 15%. Then it's Marshall at 13, and Decker was already under 10. So I don't really know. They obviously have Forte there, who they're going to pass the ball to as well. So I don't really know that the Decker news moves the needle nearly enough. One thing I think will be interesting to see going forward is if Decker misses extended time. I think you could see, like, Anunua is already quite cheap, and if he doesn't really do much in this game, he could be a huge bargain, and then all of a sudden you're looking at the most targeted receiver on a team for, like, in the low 5,000s on FanDuel and very cheap on DraftKings. So I think that he's a guy to keep an eye on going forward. The Jets clearly like him, but for this week, I'm not really a buyer.
We talked about Doug Baldwin on the last podcast as part of our picks. If you want to hear our thoughts there, he's an interesting play that bounced back last week with some more of the targets and the red zone looks that we were sort of kind of counting on him in previous weeks.
Yeah, so I think, great play. If you want to talk about a guy in that price range, in the $7,500 price range, Baldwin's a guy who I like a lot more than some of the other guys we've discussed.
The next game on the slate is Carolina and the Falcons. We talked about Cam a ton yesterday. Cam, for me, is just the very, very clear cash game play on both sites. It's going to be hard for me to get away from his just upside, all things considered. We talked about him on the last one, so we don't need to go down that road too far. I'm just going to reiterate all Cam for me in cash games. We also talked about Kelvin Benjamin in terms of him, coming off a one target performance where it's a little hard to trust what you're going to get from it. No elite receiver really gets one target in a game, no matter what the scenario is. And so it is a huge red flag for Benjamin.
Unless they're hurt, man.
Unless they're hurt. We do like him for bouncing back in terms of possibly a tournament. And if you want to stack those guys together, I think that's totally in play. And I wouldn't be surprised me if Cam was just the overall top points quarterback this week. And I think he's just by and large the favorite to do that.
Yeah, I think so too. Cam's great. He's been great. Great matchup. Like, there's just nothing not to like about the situation.
What about on the Falcons side of the? Oh, and by the way, I think we can just kind of cross Carolina's running back situation off the list. They nothing really rose to the top for them last week. What about on the Falcons side of the ball?
Well, the Falcons are interesting, right? One of the things aren't stopping at no opportunity to do is to pat ourselves on the back about Julio Jones and his bad performance against the Saints. So take some time to do that now as well, because we called it. But going into this week, I don't really think anyone's going to play him because he was so bad in a great matchup against New Orleans. And again, the $9,200 price range on DraftKings and the 9,000 range on FanDuel is so competitive that why would you bother? But he is down to 8,500 on FanDuel. So for big tournament purposes, and a lot of people are going to be very fatigued on him. He's had a lot of ups, a lot of downs. So I think that he's a worthwhile consideration for big tournaments, but you just don't need to bother in cash games. Like, on a guy who just had a one reception game, yeah, the targets weren't terrible, but again, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish there by playing a guy who will be very underowned against a tough defense. And yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah, the Falcons are like a rich man's Redskins in this idea that they just spread the ball
Ouch.
Around a ton. they have more weapons now. And, adding Sanu to the team, plus just their willingness to just split the carries and split the snaps between Freeman and Coleman, just means that you just can't get really value on any of the guys unless there was, they're really just an injury away from having value somewhere, but the fact that that isn't the case right now, I think you can just, for their prices, you can take a risk that you're just going to get the one guy that goes off, but they just haven't demonstrated that they're willing to just target one play. They're going to spread it around.
Yeah, if you want to take a risk in this game, I think Jacob Tammy is an interesting guy to target. He still has the greatest target share in his team at 14.5%, so that's higher than Jones, higher than Sanu, higher than the running backs, at least in terms of the passing game. So I think that he's an interesting guy. I mean, he's in the same price range as Fleener and Zach Miller, who we both like on FanDuel, and I think his upside is probably in the same area. I mean, he did have a game where he got 18% of his team's targets and a touchdown. So a guy you can consider, again, not a cash game play probably based on last week's crappy performance, but at least a guy I'm looking at. And actually, while I'm on the subject, it's probably worth touching on the running backs here, right? Because they, I mean, Freeman in particular just had an explosive performance against New Orleans last week. Anything interesting there?
Mostly because he's just not the guy, right? Like Coleman got a bunch of red zone looks as well. They're gonna mix things up even down and close. I mean, I guess they all have sort of upside, but
they averaged 29 fantasy points last week.
Oh yeah. I mean, New Orleans is awful though. New Orleans just couldn't stop anybody on defense last week. So like they were ripping off huge chunks of yards. That's just not going to be the case this week.
Well, they stopped all their receivers, right? I mean, like none of those receivers had good games. It was just all the running backs. I don't know. I mean, so Freeman had 19 touches. Coleman had 15. That's solid opportunity. And if they're like, if Freeman's, then the position next to Freeman's name said WR and Coleman said RB, I wonder if people would be, or vice versa, you know, I wonder if people would be a little higher on them. But that said, I personally am not. I'm just kind of throwing it out there because I think that will be a path some people go down, is viewing those two as high upside guys.
Oof, I don't. Yeah, I just think the matchup's totally different.
I think a long story short is I'm probably with you. I think that, you know, there's no reason to guess who's going to get the ball in the Falcons' territory. That backfield situation is probably the biggest mark in that favor.
All right, pal, before we move on to the next game, let's talk about one of our sponsors. Hit me with it.
Yeah, baby. So let's talk about fantasyfactor.com. So fantasyfactor.com is a new player in the DFS space, and they do a couple of things that I think are pretty interesting that I think our users should know about. First and foremost is they're a much smaller site. So, you know, a lot of people this time of year, especially with football and how huge football is, get concerned about these contests where sharks like you, Doug, are putting in thousands of entries and chewing up a big portion of the prize pool. Fantasy Factor doesn't really suffer from that. You know, it's mostly casual players who are just looking to play and have a good time during the weekend. So if you fancy yourself a good player and want to go in and play against them, I think you'll be in a really good spot too. You know, it's for players who don't want to put in $5,000 a week, who maybe only want to put, you know, $10 to $100 in a week and see how it goes. So that's fantasyfactor.com there. Now, the other thing they do, which I think is really nice, is the way they offer their bonus. So if you sign up at fantasyfactor.com, you can get $5 toward an entry right away. You don't have to wait and drip the bonus out over playing a lot of contests. Nope, you deposit $10, you'll just have $15 in your account to start playing contests with. So a very nice way to get in there, you know, get a little edge just to start off with and see if you like the software, see if you like the games and the matchups and so on. So I know last week they had about $200 overlay in their $500 guaranteed contest, and I suspect the same will be true this week. So yeah, head on over to fantasyfactor.com, sign up using promo code DFSR and get going.
Yeah, we like sites that start small and just kind of build their user base rather than just maybe shooting the moon too quickly. And
exactly, that's Fantasy Factor is self-funded. They're not going to go out of business next month because they gave $200,000 in overlay every week. Yeah, exactly. They're the real deal.
The next game on the list is the Lions headed to Chicago. Chicago's beat up right now. There's a couple questions with them, especially at the quarterback position. Detroit's an interesting team. I wonder your thoughts on Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones right now, among the top, let's say 10 guys in targets this season, he is averaging almost 10 yards per reception more than, I would say, just like the base average among that group. Is this a guy that, you know, he's getting the targets, but has he run just, we would consider it to be like way hot in terms of yards and touchdowns at this point?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and give that a yes and no grade there. One thing I think is really interesting about the Lions situation in particular is that, so the way they use their wide receivers. So if you think back to Calvin Johnson, now Calvin Johnson, obviously an elite sort of generational level talent. And Matt Stafford, when he came out, was also seen as a generational talent as well. You know, Stafford coming out of college, the way people talked about him was, you know, this guy can make throws that no one in the NFL can make, you know, and his arrival really coincided with a lot of Megatrons kind of coming into prominence. Now, I don't think Marvin Jones is on the same talent level as Calvin Jones, and I think Stafford obviously has his warts as well, but there is precedent for wide receiver ones in Detroit to be putting up huge, you know, kind of unwieldy yards per catch totals. That being said, Marvin Jones is pretty blatantly running hot as well. Like, you know, no one's going to come out and beat the next highest guy in the field by 10 yards right. per catch. So I don't think that's going to be the case. And even last week, I mean, just 6 receptions to turn that into 200 yards and 2 touchdowns is not going to happen again, probably. But the thing about Jones is you're not really paying that big a premium, right? I mean, he's 7,300 on DraftKings. Like, that's not out of bounds. 7,600 on FanDuel is not out of bounds either. And while that's, yes, expensive, there's arguably no wide receiver with greater upside right now. So I think he's a fine big tournament play. I think a lot of people will see him as a fine big tournament play. So I don't know if you're really getting much separation there. But yeah, I mean, he's absolutely in that playable category for wide receivers this week.
I know we just did a Fantasy Factor read, and I want to respect that they're a sponsor, but I also feel like this is a good opportunity to throw out a possible no halftime challenge if you want.
Yeah, a little NHC, as we call it. Sure.
So talk a little bit about no halftime, and then I'll throw out what it is.
Sure. I'll give you the clip notes on no halftime. But no halftime is an app where you can set up challenges. You choose a player you think that guy will be better than, and you issue a challenge. And you can also comb around for challenges that morons put out there, like, you know, insert guys better than Marvin Jones this week. You can go comb around and try to get the best of the challenges people have already put out into the ether. You can also use promo code DFSR25 for 100% bonus up to $25. Now, who did you like than Marvin Jones this week?
One of my favorite things about every time that you do a no halftime thing is that everyone that you play against on no halftime is a moron. That's one of my...
Mostly I'm the joke there, Doug, in case you didn't get it. I'm sure our users, you can do something for a second while I explain this joke to Doug. The joke there is that I'm always pitting it as the guy you're about to challenge me on, right? So you're about to say someone is going to be better than Marvin Jones. So that's the joke.
That's hilarious.
Unpause the recording. We can get back to the podcast.
So a couple guys that the system likes. I'm wondering, okay, so we have Marvin Jones or Doug Baldwin this week.
Yeah, Doug Baldwin. I mean, if you're just taking, like, I think Doug Baldwin will beat Jones going forward, like, I don't know, 70% of the weeks for the rest of the season or something. But the weeks where Jones beats Baldwin are going to be weeks where Jones is part of winning GPP lineups. So
right.
I think that, they're just different. They're just doing totally different things in my mind. You know, Jones is running as fast as he can and hoping to score touchdowns, and Baldwin's moving the chains. So
here's another one. Marvin Jones or Kelvin Benjamin, same price on FanDuel.
Marvin Jones.
Interesting. Marvin Jones.
Easy one. You like Benjamin better?
No, not necessarily. You just
one
said,
target last week.
No, I'm with you. I think it's funny because I think going forward, I suspect that Benjamin falls more into that Doug Baldwin camp of we consider him to be safer. When we look back at the season, I have a feeling that last week is just going to be the outlier on Benjamin. It's just, I'm not basing that on anything, just except for a feeling on that. So that, I have no like news or really stats that back that up. That's just how I feel that it's going to happen. What about Jones or Amari Cooper?
Oh, that's a little closer. Off the top of your head, who do you think has more targets this season, Jones or Cooper?
Cooper.
Jones.
Interesting.
Yeah, Jones has 29 targets in three games. I mean, that's terrific. There's really not much more you want from that. And yeah, like, it's flashy.
You know who else has 29 targets? Amari Cooper.
Yeah, that, and Ty goes to the runner. In that case, Ty goes to the guy with more yards.
What was so funny? Your douchey announcement of 29 targets was funny and funny how that works out.
That was not douchey. That was
people can comment
know-it-all-ish. That was douchey. First,
I'll give a free month month subscription to the first person that comments in the podcast that James's thing was douchey. So if you could be the first one into the comments section,
he doesn't even know how to give you a free subscription. So
Let's move off this game. Let's go to the Denver.
You know it's true. So let's keep going.
I'm going to stand by that, and I do know how to give a free month subscription. Let's go to Denver and Tampa Bay. Denver is a -3 favorite going into Tampa Bay, which says a lot, I think, about how Vegas views both of these teams right now, which is pretty amazing considering it's Trevor Siemian back or behind center for Denver, who's looked pretty competent, all things considered. What do you see here? Can you consider any of the receivers on the Denver side of the ball? Anderson's still a pretty high-volume guy. And then I have a couple of guys that I want to get your opinion on the Tampa Bay side.
Well, yeah, you know, the Denver offense was one of the big stories coming out of week 3 with the passing game finally clicking on all cylinders, really. So the big guy I think to look out for this week is going to be Emmanuel Sanders. Sanders went out there, caught 9 balls for 117 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I mean, Thomas was good too, although some of that came from just kind of that 155-yard touchdown. It's hard to know kind of what to make here, though, because they were just so bad in the first 2 weeks that I don't know that you can, you know, really count on them for that going forward. But it's obviously interesting. And I think Sanders is going to be a guy that's hugely targeted in all formats this week, because you're just not going to see a lot of guys at 6,900 on FanDuel who put up performances like he did against Cincinnati. But I'm a little concerned all the same. I mean, Simeon's another guy I think people are going to take a shot on in big tournaments. But I don't know. I mean, given that he scored essentially So right now we have him projected for 11.75 points. He scored exactly 11 in week one, exactly 12 in week two, and then 29 in week three. So what do you think the real story is there?
I think the real story is the first 2 weeks, because I think that they're still going to want to try to run the ball more than not. And they just didn't last week, and maybe they had something. I mean, they clearly had figured out something that was exposed in the Cincinnati side of the ball, because they just went way off. They just went way off path in terms of what they had done up until that point, and they just had also success. You know, a couple long touchdowns will do that for you. So it's just hard to.
Sure, but even though they're leading and they're still piling on, like, you don't take it as a sign that maybe they're gaining confidence in Simeon, or, you know, that there just might be something going on there.
I mean, let me rephrase. The truth is probably somewhere in between, because the first 2 weeks he throws for one total touchdown and basically the same amount of pass attempts, a few less against Carolina. And then last week throws four. I don't think he's a favorite to do either. I think, though, he's a favorite to just do something in the middle, right? Like 1.5 touchdowns a game, maybe like trending up toward two. But the four touchdown per game thing, I don't think that will happen again the rest of the season. That'd be my bet.
I think that's probably a fair bet. I won't personally be playing Simeon, but I think you can make a pretty strong case for Sanders as a good play this week.
Yeah, if you think the targets are there. What about C.J. Anderson?
C.J. Anderson, I think, is an interesting guy. He falls in that no man's land price-wise of 7,900. And to me, I sort of see him as a poor man's Lamar Miller, in that, you know, the results haven't totally clicked on yet. But I think Miller has just more going for him, which is less competition from his passing game and just more routine usage. Like, Miller's topping 25 touches a game, you know, going out of style. And Anderson now has at least one game under his belt where he just didn't see the ball that much. And it was very odd, too, because given that Denver had the lead and this rookie quarterback, you would think that everything played in Anderson's favor for game script for last week. So, yeah, I think he's a guy that's going to bounce back. I think he'll have some big games going forward, and I think he'll be dramatically underowned probably based on the opportunity that I perceive him to have against Tampa Bay here. But yeah, probably not a guy I'll wind up rostering very much.
Yeah, the game script thing with Anderson is funny, because two of their touchdowns were, one was 41 yards and one was 55 yards, and that will just, it could be piling on. It could also just be quick strikes that don't allow you to get the touches that they maybe had planned, right? So I didn't watch this game personally, but because Simeon's pass attempts didn't go anywhere different, but then they had these two, you know, 96 yards worth of in two plays, I think you see Anderson's, his usage look more like weeks one and two when going forward, because I don't think they're a favorite to just have those quick strikes a ton.
Well, I'm not sure exactly it'll work out that way. So 2 weeks ago, the Broncos ran 64 plays, and Anderson was able to, you know, achieve running back one level production, or at least running back one level opportunity. Last week, the Broncos ran just 57 plays, but Simeon actually increased his attempts by two. So yeah, they had a few of those quick strikes, but that was also pretty blatantly more part of the game plan. Now, maybe you could argue that the Broncos had more confidence in him because he was connecting on those balls downfield, but I do think that it's an indication that the Broncos are at least shifting the plan a little bit. Of particular note, too, I think, is Devontae Booker. So while Anderson still got his touches in the previous week, Booker still did go out there and get 9 carries. And then last week, 9 carries where Anderson got 20. This week, he gets 4 carries and Anderson gets 14. So while it's not a running back by committee or anything, it could be more like that Giants situation we saw where, like, Jennings would get 18 and Breen would get 6.
Yeah.
And when you start giving away that number of carries, you know, that really eats into your overall upside. So I don't personally see Anderson as a cash game play.
No, I don't either. And the Booker thing actually probably worries me more than it would probably worry me more than anything going forward. But yeah, I mean, especially, yeah, if they're gaining more confidence in Simeon too, then that those touches are just going to go somewhere else. So I think I'm with you on there. On the Tampa Bay side of the ball, Mike Evans right now is in that elite class of targets per game. He is actually really only behind Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown's 13.3 targets, and Evans is right at 13. Denver is maybe not the best matchup from a defensive standpoint, but that level of targets is definitely in that elite class. Does that kind of volume for Evans push him into cash game considerations, almost maybe matchup independent?
Well, it's interesting on Evans. So I think that this is going to be one of those things where if you wind up playing Evans in like every single matchup for the rest of the season, probably on aggregate, you come out ahead, because like if he continues, obviously, at these target rates, I mean, 19% of his team's target share is positively elite. You're not going to see numbers that high really from almost anyone. So yeah, if he's going to continue doing that, I think you'll be happy more times than you're sad. That being said, he's going to break your heart a few weeks because he is a very much a guy like T.Y. Hilton or Allen Robinson, where he's not going to convert a high percentage of his targets into catches. And if he's going to get 14 targets a game or whatever, like seven catches is plenty in most cases. So, 8,000, I think he's obviously one of the very highest upside guys in the NFL, certainly has upside arguably greater than even guys like Marvin Jones or T.Y. Hilton, because we've seen his downplay ability and even the ability to catch balls in traffic is so, so elite. Mike Evans, fantastic. I'm a little skeptical taking him against Denver, though, right? I mean, it's an elite defense. I don't know. How's Denver looked against wide receiver ones this season?
Well, they have conflicting numbers, right? So, okay, so in DVOA, they rank third, which is great, right, obviously. But in pass attempts to the wide receiver one, they're allowing the most in the league, right? So they're it's 11.2 pass attempts per game to the wide receiver one. And, you know, some of these numbers are tricky because of how teams evaluate, you know, how some statistical outlets rank who the wide receiver one is on a team. So that can get a little tricky, but the volume is there. So those are conflicting numbers, right? So you could say great on defense against the wide receiver one, but great defenses don't allow tons of volume to a particular receiver either. Because if you look
explain why that happens.
Well, because because a shutdown corner. So if you think about who the shutdown corners are in the NFL, right? Like, let's just say Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman is clearly, that's a name guy, right? He allows, and let's also just assume that he's shadowing wide receiver one. So we need to do some assumptions on this. Let's just say we assume that that's what he's doing. He's allowing 7.3 targets per game to his to the guy he's covering. That's about the best in the league, which you would assume to be the case from an elite cover corner. It's hard to be
an elite. The point there is that the quarterback looks up and it's just a guy up in your jersey and you just can't throw the ball to him.
Right. You can't even consider it. The fact that so many passes have gone that direction to Denver. And that's the thing where I'm just like, kind of like, maybe the truth is in between. Some of these things maybe need to smooth out as the year moves on. But if you figure it's, you know, Harris and Tlaib, and I haven't watched enough of Denver to know if they're following guys around or not. That number strikes me as just odd, right? That's more all it is. That's really all it is. And where I find Evans really interesting is on DraftKings and PPR. He's only 6,500. That's pretty cheap, right? Like that's significantly below other receivers. Like, I'll give you a list of receivers that he's like in the same range as, right? Mm-hmm. He's in the same range as DeSean Jackson, Michael Crabtree, the aforementioned Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas. You know what I mean? Like, that's the group that he's in, and he's got like 30% more targets already.
Yeah, that's probably not the right group. I think that's a good observation. One thing to note on Denver is the wide receiver ones they've actually faced. So I think it's actually, it's pretty curious to break this down on a game-by-game basis. So they get Kelvin Benjamin week one. Benjamin comes back from missing a whole season. He gets 12 targets. Now, he only converts six of them, and that's where the DVOA thing comes in, right? Because the DVOA is going to look and figure out what you're doing on a per-play basis. But Benjamin hasn't always been the greatest, you know, conversion guy anyway in terms of converting targets into receptions. Then they go and they face T.Y. Hilton. Now, T.Y. Hilton's struggles in converting targets to receptions are well documented. He still gets 11 targets, but only receives four of them. And then, of course, they go in and they face AJ Green, and AJ Green had a nice week. So I think AJ Green, by the way, is also a clear number one.
Yep.
I don't know. It's very hard to evaluate, I think, based on that game script, what we should expect from them going forward. My suspicion is that we can also continue to trust last year's numbers. I think that the high target volume makes sense for given the names we mentioned, right? Like, those guys are all big parts of their team's offenses, Hilton and Green in particular. So I'm not sure that tells us a whole lot. I think that it's fine just to do what we do, basically, which is hedge both ways, right? Say that, yeah, they've been tough on a per play basis. Teams have still at least tried it that way. That'll probably happen with Evans here too, and I wouldn't be surprised if he has a nice game.
I'm fine playing him in cash on DraftKings at the price. I think he's just mispriced, and this is where I get into like the matchup independent piece, where I'm just saying, like, you can kind of play him at that price if he's going to be just that elite guy. Dallas goes into San Francisco this week. They're going to be without Dez. We talked a little bit about Cole Beasley last time, possibly emerging into a more heavily targeted guy. We saw Ezekiel Elliott getting a bajillion carries, rough estimate, last week. last week, you could see maybe that continuing against the San Francisco team that's playing a little bit faster pace now with Chip Kelly. Do any of the Dallas guys strike you as cash game plays here?
Well, yeah, Beasley, I think, certainly strikes me as a cash game play. I mean, we've talked about target percentage in the past. When Beasley has been on the field this season, he's garnered 21% of his team's targets, which is higher than Mike Evans. Now, of course, he doesn't go on the field for every snap. Like, he's really only used situationally. So that could change a bit with Dez Bryant actually being out this week. I think, in fact, that it will change. So I do think Beasley is going to be a guy a lot of people turn to. Just as a cheap guy, they can kind of stick in there and not worry about. It'll be really hard for him to go underneath this sort of established floor he has. He scored almost exactly 10 fantasy points in each of the first three games of the season, which you'll be pretty happy with. You know, if you get that out of your 5,200 and it lets you pay up elsewhere, a very, very attractive option for people that just want to escape that wide receiver three position cheaply.
Yeah, 3,900 on DraftKings and PPR is another number that's going to be just hard to get away from if you just think he's a double digit target guy, which it's reasonable to expect that he will be.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, the trick, of course, is going to be there are a lot of cheap options this week.
Right. So yep.
At some point, you're going to have to pick one and not pick another. And, you know, do you want to, say, get away from your tight end position with Kobe Fleener, or do you want to go Cole Beasley? Now, that's a false choice on some level, but it's a choice a lot of people will wind up making, right? And actually, it might be useful for people to really sit down and think, like, where do I want to prioritize? Do I want to get Jordan Howard at 37 or Kobe Fleener at 32, or do I want to go Beasley? So, I do think, though, Beasley will be aware of him. He's going to be a very, very highly owned guy for cash game purposes. As for Ezekiel Elliott, we've talked about a lot of guys in his price range, in that 8,100, 8,000 price range. Ezekiel Elliott does a lot of the same things those guys do. Like, I mean, he might as well be a Lamar Miller from my perspective, right? The touches are almost identical. The actual performance has been very similar, with the main difference being that Elliott has actually gotten in the end zone. So, while, sure, solid cash game play, the position might just wind up being too competitive this week, and he might wind up getting shouldered out for me.
What about on the San Francisco side of the ball? Anything to see here at all?
Nothing comes to mind off the top of my head. San Francisco has just kind of been erratic and doing a bunch of different things. I don't see any real reason to prioritize them in cash games, for sure, based on their erratic history. For big tournaments, maybe you can talk about Carlos Hyde. He had a big game last week in a very tough matchup with Seattle, but, you know, the track record has been too irregular for me to really feel thrilled with him.
Well, he falls into that there's too many cheap guys category, because he's only 4,200 on DraftKings, and that's an enticing price. But then again, you're starting to stare down at a pretty long list of guys that are like this, and
you got to pick somebody, right?
Right.
And I just don't know why he's the guy you wind up picking.
Yeah, not as an underdog, I don't think, against a decent Dallas defense. So I don't think that's the guy I would go to, especially.
Yeah, Dallas has really been slowing games down this season.
Right.
They stand to do that even more with Dez out. Again, prioritizing Beasley and Elliott out of the backfield. So there's no real Niners that are jumping off the page for me.
And what will probably be a pretty popular fantasy game this week, the Saints go into San Diego. San Diego has the highest implied total at 29 right now. That has not really moved since open. Breeze is very clearly a different quarterback away from New Orleans on the road. Rivers, I think, ends up becoming an interesting guy. There's some other San Diego guys. What do you think? Do you think this is, like, when we look down upon it, this is the highest just percentage ownership game, just because of it could just be a track meet that New Orleans tends to play?
You know, I'm not totally sure. I mean, we talked about Benjamin just a little bit earlier. I suspect Benjamin will be super highly owned. A guy we're very high on is Melvin Gordon for this week. You know, with the attrition that we've seen on the San Diego side of the ball, he stands to continue to be a guy who gets 20 plus touches a game at a very reasonable salary. I think we view him as sort of, you know, the top of that mid-tier running back heap. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, well? I think so. I mean, all the narrative and contextual pieces are there. Atlanta gashed the Saints last week. They just, you know, we mentioned it before, they just ran all over them, and they split the carries. San Diego is not going to split the carries. And if you think that Saints defense is true to what they have sort of just done since the beginning of the season, then I think Gordon ends up maybe becoming the highest owned cash game play at running back just because of those pieces.
You think so? I mean, even though he struggled last week against Indianapolis, at least on a yards per carry basis?
I think so. I mean, just because he's a little bit underneath some of those other guys, I could be wrong. It might be a little closer than I imagine, because there are just some very interesting guys. I think David Johnson is going to be pretty high up there, Lamar Miller. We have another guy, a Bears guy, coming up, Jordan Howard. So it's a little hard for me to tell.
I think Gordon will unquestionably be higher owned than the guys above him. I just wonder if people are going to go in a more punty direction beneath him instead.
I don't know. I could be wrong. If I were to guess now, I would say he's the highest owned cash game play. And I think it's probably, if it were the case, it'd be correct. He's a guy that I have no problem running out in cash there.
I think I'm there.
Do you tend to stay away from the Saints? Let's assume Willie Snead is going to play. Is there anything to get excited about, knowing that Breeze is just a different quarterback here? They have a bunch of different weapons. You mentioned Fleener a couple times, so I think we're high on him. But other than that, can you get behind anyone in the wide receiver core for New Orleans?
Well, no. I think Cooks, you know, has shown that he's just not going to be a like in the same way we discussed Kelvin Benjamin, for Cooks to go out, get just 10% of his team's targets. I mean, he got a carry if you like that. But just for 13 yards and a good matchup with Atlanta, that's a pretty big black mark on his resume. And frankly, he wasn't fantastic in week 2 against the Giants either. So I just don't know why you want to pay wide receiver 1 prices for a guy who's only occasionally a wide receiver 1 when you can just get right. someone who's always good, or at least good in a more consistent basis. Obviously, we're not going to play Snead coming off that toe injury. Toe injury can be just what you need to lose a step, which is not what anyone needs, particularly on a fast-paced offense like New Orleans. And then there's Fleener. I think a lot of people are looking at Snead and basing their desire to play Fleener on Snead's, you know, whether he plays or not. But I think it's worth pointing out, like I have in the past, that Fleener had 17% of the team's targets in both week 2 against the Giants and week 3 against Atlanta. So I think Fleener just fits a different role than either Snead or Cooks, and that he'll be highly targeted in this game, kind of no matter who else plays alongside him.
I think it's reasonable also to target, we mentioned Travis Benjamin earlier, just in terms of maybe cash game plays that you can get it in on the San Diego side. Although I would say another guy, Tyrell Williams, I find to be really interesting too. He's about the same targets as Benjamin, but on DraftKings, he's coming significantly cheaper. So I don't wonder if that's like maybe a pivot where if you think Benjamin's just more of a name guy, I think it's funny to call him a name guy, but I think he's the guy that is more in the public sphere of just DFS players, like knowing that name. Whereas Williams, I mean, 4,400 again in the old, everyone's cheap, so who are we going to play category? He strikes me as a really, really good PPR play this week, especially on DraftKings at the price.
Well, okay, I think Tyrell Williams is definitely a reasonable guy to look at in kind of the same vein. But on the other side of the ball is Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas, of course, the rookie out of Cal who has increased his target share every week so far this season. And he played every offensive snap against Atlanta, had 7 receptions for 71 yards and a touch. I don't think that you'll wind up playing him if Snead comes back. I think his status, unlike Fleener's, very, very dependent on whether Snead plays. But if Snead is out, expect to see a lot of Michael Thomas in all formats. And again, I think that's probably correct. I think you can almost certainly play him in any format if Snead is out.
The next game, it was the Rams head into Arizona. Arizona has been a very difficult team to evaluate this year. We talked about this a little also on the podcast, where they've been just part of games that have made them a little bit tough to know exactly what their plan is because they've been blowouts going one way or the other. They started as a -10 favorite. It's been bet down to -7.5. So that's a pretty significant line movement, mostly coming off of their implied total. So where do you think David Johnson jumps back to the pack, the top of the list of just these running back one heavy volume guys this week against a Rams team? Is it something you can trust? And would you play him more than some of the guys we mentioned before, like Gordon, Lamar Miller, Ezekiel Elliott?
So David Johnson's an interesting guy. I looked at him this week for our picks article, which is to say I just kind of broke the situation down a little bit because he was higher owned last week than I anticipated he would be. And I'd like to dive into why. So first of all, you compare him to a guy like Ezekiel Elliott or Lamar Miller, and the first thing that jumps out is that the volume simply hasn't been there, right? He's gotten 20 touches one game, 16 in another, and while that's not terrible, like in the modern era for running backs, you're not going to look at those numbers and be too discouraged. You're also not pumped, right? Like to get 15 touches against Tampa Bay when his team wins by 33 points. Like when you think about a conventional running back one, those aren't the kind of numbers that you're hoping for. So basically, if you're playing him this week, what you're hoping is that he turns his touches into these huge yard totals, which you know he does pretty reliably, especially compared to a lot of running backs and especially based on how he's used. But I think a reasonable thing to do would be to say, well, he's probably not going to be a guy who goes in there and gets 60 receiving yards a game, given that last year he got just 29 receiving yards a game. And if you're going to take away 3 points right there and give him less usage than the other elite running backs, it's really hard for me personally to consider him a cash game play, especially given that we're paying a premium on him, right? So some running running backs just do have better yards per carry, better yards per reception totals than others, but I don't see him being as that much better than everyone else to where I'm willing to pay up for less opportunity.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, he's a weird guy because I think the idea behind him is he's going to be this huge volume back. And really, I mean, going back to last season, he's had two games ever where he's topped more than 20 carries. He had the one huge one at 29 versus Philly last year and a 22 game and nothing else. And these are in like high leverage games. And again, Arizona plays a weird style because they do blow a lot of, they blew a ton of teams out last year. And so you're like, well, at some point they just didn't need to, no reason to hurt a guy. And that is correct in general. So he's just a really, I find him to be a very, very difficult guy to evaluate, mostly because Arizona just plays unconventional in the way the final score looks. So I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me to see him get 20 carries, but I also, you just really can't, you just 100% cannot pencil him in for that kind of production.
No, you absolutely can't. And I think, you know, Arizona also has a good plan B in the possession game and Larry Fitzgerald, who we like again this week too. So I don't, again, David Johnson, great big tournament play. I mean, he's a guy who in any given week can be the highest scoring running back, which not a lot of people can say. But for me, just not worth the big investment.
Yeah, and we mentioned Larry Fitzgerald last podcast, is what we still think he's a really great cash game play. The Cardinals have shown that they are willing to target him just pretty much the same amount game over game. So we
game
like
game script independent. Yeah, yeah, he's a phenomenally safe play.
Getting still deeper into the 4 o'clock games, KC goes to Pittsburgh this week. Pittsburgh gets Le'Veon Bell back, and where do you see Bell sort of fitting back in with this offense? I mean, it probably means the end of D'Angelo Williams for sure, but what do you see as Bell? Do you consider him like a safe guy coming back? Guys haven't played in forever, though he is an elite talent. What do you see coming out of the Pittsburgh side?
It's hard. I mean, Bell, FanDuel, they're daring you to take Bell, right? I mean, 8,300 for a guy who's been the highest scoring guy several weeks in fantasy history. That's very, very tempting. Really hard to consider him a safe play. I mean, first of all, you know, this is actually one of those blessings in disguise where he gets a tough matchup with Kansas City that probably would make him a hard guy to play either way. But yeah, he's going to be a guy that it's going to be hard not to put him in a few big tournament lineups, because if he does go off this game, he's not going to be cheap for long. I think more interesting is going to be looking at what his usage is in this game, because I could see it being a game where he gets a lot of usage but doesn't convert it into a ton of fantasy points. And if that's the case, he'll probably be a phenomenal play going into week five. So I don't plan on personally playing him in cash games this week. That might wind up being correct. I'm just not totally sure. But given that we do have a track record on so many other guys and so many other plays we do like, I just don't personally see a reason to stick my neck on a guy coming back off such a long absence.
And that's really it. When there's a question mark around it and we have non-question marks sort of in the same price range, I think it's just fine. And if you miss the boat on him at 8,300, then you just missed the boat. And I don't think anyone would scold you for that.
I think that'll be his cheapest price all season. I will say that. I think
I agree with you.
If you want to play him, this is the cheapest time you can do so. It just might not be correct.
I apologize. I skipped a game before. So we'll head back before we get to the Monday night game. I skipped the Bills and the New England game. I went right over it for reasons unknown. Can't read, whatever the problem is. There's no line in this game right now. Now that could be because it's almost definitely because no one really knows who's going to play quarterback for the Patriots this week. Could be Brissett. There's some chance Garoppolo comes back. There's been Julian Edelman buzz, although that could just be more lip service than anything else. I don't see why that would actually even be the case. How do we evaluate a game that Vegas is not able to evaluate going into it?
That sounds pretty difficult. Well, I mean, first of all, obviously, we can get a general sense or a range of how we can guess Vegas would perceive this game to be. My suspicion is that, you know, the Patriots will be something like a touchdown favorites almost no matter who plays quarterback. So that being said, I think that
just as a note about that, they opened at -4 and then they got taken off the board. So there was a line. It was New England -4, but now it's off board. So I don't know if that influences you as being a touchdown favorite or not.
Yeah, and then a touchdown, I guess I'm speaking very, very broadly.
Okay.
Somewhere in that 4-7, 4-8, somewhere in that range. I think it got taken off the board because it'll probably be higher if Garoppolo comes back. That's just what my gut tells me. And I think the opening line was based on him definitely not playing. But either way, I don't think that I'm very interested in a lot of their passing game. And simultaneously, I'm still quite interested in their running game. LeGarrette Blount has been a very, very top-tier opportunity guy in that same conversation with Lamar Miller and Ezekiel Elliott. He's also had the benefit of being able to punch it in the end zone. The Patriots are still a high-octane offense somehow, even with these unknown guys at quarterback. So given that they have been able to get down into the red zone, even against relatively tough defenses like Houston and Miami, or Houston and Arizona, rather, leads me to believe that Blunt is still going to be a solid play going into this week.
Yeah, he's just still a great deal on DraftKings. He's only 5,000. If you think he's going to be a 20-plus touch guy, then that number's pretty easy to get into cash games, just a running back position that doesn't have as much. If you want to go, I know he's not a reception guy, which, you know, hurts in the PPR fashion, but really you're not going to get that kind of that many touches out of a $5,000 player. So I think you can not lock and load it because there are other considerations. I think this is a week where I think it's just totally fine. I've said this a couple of weeks, but this one is especially true, where it's just fine to run multiple cash lineups. Not so much on FanDuel. I think that's pretty crystallized for me. But on DraftKings, where there are just a bunch of different value plays, especially coming out of that flex position, I think it's fine to run four or five different cash game lineups, and you still have an edge over the rest of the field. Blunt is a guy that works into the mix pretty easily there.
Yeah, I think I like Blunt. One thing to note about Buffalo, they have been pretty tough on a yards per carry basis to opposing backs this season. They're 3.4 yards per carry allowed is fifth best in the NFL, but they're also allowing a lot of attempts, which likely means that they know the run is coming because they're down or whatever. So I think that, yeah, Blunt's a totally fine play and another argument for playing multiple slates for sure.
And well, and it's funny too, because they have played two what I would consider to be good running backs in Forte and David Johnson. So I don't know if that speaks that if that number means more to you, knowing that they've played two guys that we would consider like the upper echelon of running backs.
Yeah, I don't know that that tells the whole story. I mean, Forte did have his lowest yards per carry of the season against them, but Justin Forsett had his best yards per carry of the season against them, and David Johnson did as well. So I don't know that that really, or I'm sorry, David Johnson was middle of the pack. He had 4.4 yards per carry. So I think a lot of that's just colored by game script related stuff and the fact that Forte had so many carries at a relatively unspectacular rate against them. And again, a lot of that I think was due to game script. So no, I'm not reading too much into that and saying that, yeah, they're going to be definitively a great team going forward. Forte, frankly, is just under 4 yards per carry on the season. So while he's a big name and does a lot of receiving out of the backfield, I don't expect the Jets to be a big yards per carry team. So yeah, that's kind of my take there.
The final game on the slate is the Monday night game. Giants head into Minnesota. Giants look like they're going to be without really much of any running game. It could be Orleans Darkwa starting for them. The Vikings have been a pretty surprised team, all things considered. They have no Adrian Peterson. They still go out and beat Carolina last week. Bradford's shown that he maybe wasn't the tales of his demise. Maybe we're told a little bit too early in terms of just, you know, how accurate a passer he is. This is, you know, these Monday night games fall into these in-between territories because they're not on main slates anymore, which I think in general is good, but that it kind of just makes them not as fantasy relevant, all things considered. What do you like coming out of this Giants game? They're pretty heavy underdogs at this point, -5.
Sure. I've looked at this Orleans Darkwa situation probably to an unreasonable degree because anytime you're going to get a perceived running back one at 4,500 on FanDuel, you just owe it to yourself to take a nice hard look at it. What I've kind of concluded there is that I do think Darkwa is going to wind up being a value, and I think I'm grateful that he's not available on the main slates because there are so many good options that it would be hard to pick him over some of the other ones that I perceive to be a little bit more reliable. But that being said, 4,500 is really, really cheap. And yes, they've talked about using Bobby Rainey in the passing game out of the backfield, but I think that Darkwa will still get the lion's share. I think it'll basically be a proxy of the Jennings and Vereen situation, which means Darkwa, I think, is going to be a terrific value. And for me, it's going to be in all of those Sunday into Monday overlapping slates.
Yeah, I don't think I'm as high. Minnesota is a really good defense. They rank fourth against the rush in DVOA so far this season. I know they haven't played really elite running backs, but our Darkwa isn't that either. So I don't know. This Giants thing just worries me. I could see a situation where they know that they're maybe going to be behind in the run. They could just be behind in the game, and they just start airing it out all over the place, and then the running game isn't even part of their script. I'm not positive he's just a lock and load play for me, even on those short slates. I had to look at it. I maybe haven't looked at it close enough, but there's a lot of just big question marks for me in this kind of situation with him, and I'm not as bullish. On the Minnesota side of the ball, McKinnon got a bunch of touches last week, though he still will not be the goal line guy for Minnesota. Diggs is a guy that has kind of vacillated between value and maybe not as much in terms of wide receiver, considering his kind of targets. What do you like from Minnesota?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I think you mentioned Diggs. Diggs is a guy we had kind of an internal debate about last week, you know, discussing who the real Stephon Diggs would wind up being. He was extremely cheap and coming off, obviously, the best game of his career. And he came out and disappointed against Carolina. Now, Carolina's won a tough matchup to evaluate because a lot of people thought they would be considerably worse this season, given that both of their starting cornerbacks were leaving. You know, it kind of hasn't totally played out that way. Carolina's still been relatively strong against wide receivers. So I'm not exactly sure what to make of Diggs. I do still like that he had 15% of his team's targets. I suspect he'll be highly involved in the passing game here. And on short slates, he's just going to be a fine option. Like, you know, if you're playing a two-game slate, getting a wide receiver one for 6,100 is probably an opportunity that's too good to pass up. But if he were on the main slate, I probably wouldn't wind up playing him.
Yeah, in terms of the passing game, also Kyle Rudolph, I think, is a guy you can take a look at. He went 7 for 70 and a touchdown last week. I don't think that's probably the very, very high end of what he will do in terms of production, though he is seeing a decent target percentage, around 15% this year coming out of Bradford, who is an accurate thrower. The $3,400 price on DraftKings is a pretty easy one for me on that short slate, so he's a guy that I'll also look for in the passing game there. All right, that pretty much closes it out for a Week 4 game-by-game breakdown. If you want some more of the information that we're using or the numbers that we're referencing, you can head over to the site dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, and you can check out a subscription package that will include optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, as well as our state-of-the-art player lab, which will allow you to filter and make lineups using really any criteria that you think you would research on a given week. Defense versus position, defense versus a particular type of wide receiver, pace, Vegas over-unders, really all the stuff that you need that you would just click around the internet and try to find on your own. We package it all together in that state-of-the-art player lab. We're really proud of it. Go over and check that out now. It's $29.95 a month, and that includes projections for NFL, NBA in a couple weeks, NHL, and MLB while time lasts. Buddy, good luck in Week 4.
I won't need it, Doug. It's a skill game, my friend.
All right. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Peace.